You're listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast for corporate real estate and workplace leaders, where we talk about all things workplace and invite the people who are shaping the next generation of the office experience. I'm your host, Rafael Morgulis. In today's episode, I am joined by Harry Morfakis. Harry is a senior manager in technology consulting at Accenture. Thanks for joining us. I mentioned you being a senior manager in technology consulting, but can you maybe describe a little bit more what's your role and together with your professional background?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. So yeah, Harry Morfakis, based out of our London office. I'm a senior manager within Digital Workplace. Effectively, what we look at and support clients with is the reinvention and continuous upgrade of the workplace. And that doesn't just mean Outlook and Teams and Slack nowadays, but it really is all encompassing. So everything that touches the employee, enables them to be productive, collaborate and do their job, typically falls within our remit. And how do we continually grow and expand and improve that to bring about what we call, you know, the future of work, basically?
That sounds extremely interesting and challenging at the same time. My first question based on that is, who are your typical stakeholders? Because within that kind of remit, there's a lot of different types of people.
Good question. The answer has evolved over time. I think traditionally, if we look back, say, 7 to 10 years ago, it was predominantly CTOs. So back in the day, I don't think the employee was as prioritized, let's say, as they are today. So everything that fell under Outlook upgrades, Windows upgrades, device upgrades, very hardware and point focused. And what's begun over particularly the last 3 years, and it has been a busy 3 years since the pandemic, has been really around how do we enable a great experience for the user. So it's this appreciation that, sure, the endpoint's important, the device is important, the software is important, but it's really about how do you bring it all together to enable that world-class employee experience. So our buyer over time has really transitioned from CTO, heads of workplace, et cetera, to actually much more sometimes in the real estate area, but predominantly now more in the chief HR officer. So really about looking after the people and appreciating that a good employee experience is a massive competitive advantage for organizations.
And you mentioned that there has been a bit of an evolution of the types of profiles that would come to Accenture for these questions and challenges. Today, at this moment in time, what would be kind of the typical questions and challenges that people are coming to you for?
I think the questions, they do vary from organization to organization, but predominantly what we're seeing a lot more of now is we're seeing, you know, massive loss in retention, we're struggling with motivation, productivity, stuff of that nature. So how do we go about enabling this experience? I think what we saw with COVID was a wide variety of organizations being very creative to keep operations running, keep BAU moving forward. What we're at now effectively is a position where those, I'll call them temporary measures, are not necessarily the best thing for productivity, collaboration, everything moving forward. So people moved quickly and we had to at the time, the situation dictated that. Where we're at now is we need to almost not start from scratch, but really start from first principles around what does a good employee experience look and feel like? How do we go about engineering that? So what we saw is that, you know, the pandemic kicked off, everyone went and bought Teams or Zoom, and sometimes they had both. They bought OneDrive, sometimes they had Box, multiple and effectively lots of redundant software that let them do one thing. But what we're looking at now, especially as we move into what is very likely going to be a large global recession, is how do we begin to streamline a lot of these systems? So how can I take my fundamentals that most large organizations, and we predominantly work with the Fortune 500, so the Workdays, the ServiceNows, the Salesforces of the world, how do we take the vast capabilities of those platforms and begin to actually integrate them with each other and into a common platform, let's say, to enable that experience? So I think it's about much more going back to the drawing board, saying, let's not paper over the cracks anymore. Let's start fresh. What would look good? How can we use what you have today and actually save you a lot of money in your ongoing SaaS bill?
And you mentioned these three large, let's say, centers that come to you, and you have, or you had predominantly the IT piece, and then more and more people from the real estate workplace side, and then as well HR. And there's a growing understanding that basically, yes, the employee experience needs to bring all these things under the same hood. Now, we also know, and it's a question that I ask almost all my guests at this point, it's difficult for organizations, especially for large, very large organizations. It's extremely hard to integrate these things. So maybe what's the first or the easy way to get that done concretely?
I think it all comes down to incentives. As with anything, if we put the right incentives in place, we can then go about enabling that experience. So I think for us, the reason we haven't seen this is the way we try and look at things is the workplace, the workforce, and the workspace. And we're painting with a broad brush, but that roughly translates to the workplace has traditionally been the remit of IT and the CTO office, CIO even. You've got workspace, which is very much real estate and property, and workforce, which has typically been the domain of human resources. What we're seeing now is that, and individually, those teams have achieved great things, but the reason we've never reached that upper echelon of employee experience is because those teams are not incentivized to work together. There's no real, if I succeed, you succeed. Whereas what we're seeing now, and something that Accenture has very much been a trailblazer in, is putting together a digital experience lead, effectively a chief experience officer, who can actually take that initiative and drive it forward under one umbrella. So, for example, we build a funnel that says all these activities, whether it relates to IT, real estate, property, people, they all effectively reach the same endpoint. It's all to do with the employee. Does it improve experience? Yes, no. How much do we think it's going to improve experience? And obviously, we have a way of quantifying that, but it lets us look at a single budget under and review all these activities under one banner, which helps us select the best pieces of transformation or activities we'll be undertaking for the next 12 or 18 months and quantify them based on their impact to not just the bottom line, but employee experience and doing that together. And that's where we begin to unlock synergies, because if you go and purchase a brand new office, that's fantastic from a real estate perspective. But if you're not tightly integrated with your IT teams or your HR teams, you're going to miss out on loads of good opportunities to take what is a great investment to being an exceptional investment. So it's really about trying to bring teams together, incentivize it, and change the organizational structure in such a way that it lets us do that.
It sounds also like it's almost a simplification or a clarification of what the objectives should be, in the sense that yes, of course, IT, you're going to have all these different objectives, which are really, let's say, more functional and more specific to you. But you're going to have to respond to one very clear top objectives, which is for the benefit of the company. And that might be a little bit of a clarification, which was not there in the first place.
Absolutely. I think one thing that we're seeing a lot of now is obviously, again, like I said, we're going into a global recession over the next 6 to 8 quarters. I think what that's going to mean and what technology and business leaders shouldn't lose sight of is we can still move forward and enhance employee experience. We just need to make sure we do it in the right way. So the hook effectively becomes we need to cut cost, and we do need to cut cost, and we need to streamline. But let's put in place, let's have the right long-term vision so that as we simplify and improve these processes, we actually get to a position where in 2024, 2025, we have the foundation, we have the building blocks that we can continue to augment and enhance the employee experience. So let's not just cut cost for the sake of cutting costs now, only to shoot ourselves in the foot and be in a difficult position in 18 to 24 months' time.
To speak about something else, you talk about this concept or this notion of the continuum. Can you explain what this is for the layman that has never heard about that?
Absolutely. So what we term the effect of the workplace continuum really comes down to the fact that there is no one size fits all. There's the multitude of, let's call them configurations or approaches that vary from company to company. So, and again, a lot of it will come down to some of our clients really depend on their high touch, high service organizations. They're about providing experience to their customers, for example. Others, far more hands-off, they're much more infrastructure-heavy organizations. And what workplace and experience means to them will vary. And a lot of that has to do with the culture that already exists within the organization. So for us, it's really more of a term meant to encapsulate that you can't just go and copy-paste approaches from one client to another. It really is about encompassing everything. And the fact that if I just do a device upgrade, I might have improved your employee experience somewhat, but I haven't really considered it holistically. And we need to look far more broadly in how we approach this. And that's where, again, coming back to the workplace, workforce, workspace mental model, that's really where it comes about.
That's interesting because I've had a few conversations that there are some people that think that with, for example, artificial intelligence and with technology improvements in general, it could be realistic to think of a very personalized experience and to go more and more towards something that is extremely personalized. I still have a little bit of a skepticism to how much it's not the possibilities that are not there. It's more like, how can we implement this? This is going to be hard because, like you said, for now, we've been functioning with this one size fits all. And how long is it going to take us to get to an extremely personalized experience? That seems far-fetched.
It does. And I think it comes down to, what do we want to achieve? So we want effectively an employee experience that means people are free to come and collaborate. They feel empowered. They can be productive and do their job. That's really what it comes down to. And obviously they have a good enough time that they want to stay with the organization. So, and again, that's not an exhaustive strategy assessment. That's really what people want when they come to us. Now, if we take the opposite of that argument, so instead of one size fits all, if you've got 100,000 employees, it doesn't necessarily mean you have 100,000 personalized employee experiences, because ultimately, there's no return on investment for doing that. At the end of the day, this is a business function and it needs to be efficiently run, let's put it that way. But it doesn't mean that one is the only modality we can operate within. So what we then start to do, and the way we tackle this typically, is we approach it from a, many people will probably roll their eyes into the backs of their heads when they hear persona-driven breakdowns. But effectively what we do is we understand, how do people want to work? So a good example with a recent client of ours is we took their employee journeys and the touch points. So everything from deciding to come into the office, how do I know when my colleagues are going to be in the office? How do I know I want to turn up to the office, through to actually appearing in the building, finding my way to a room, checking into the room, raising an IT ticket because something's broken, for example. All these journeys effectively map out across these multitude of personas. And obviously we have to include stuff such as accessibility, inclusion, to make sure everyone is included in that. And that's an important part of it. But effectively what we do is we build that out. So we start from the bottom up and we say, okay, based on the experience you want to enable, and it doesn't have to be the same across everywhere. So at your headquarters, you're going to have these, let's call them platinum level experiences. And then you'll have, you know, gold, silver, bronze, etc. Once you know what you want to achieve, you can then really look at your enterprise architecture stack and say, okay, I've got 5 of the 8 things I probably need to do this today. Great. What are the other 3 that I need to go and acquire? Which of those 3 are going to be future-proof platforms that are going to support me for the next 5 to 7 to 10 years, as an example? So as opposed to starting with the vision and saying, okay, here's some systems, we'll pull this together, we really go back to first principles and start from, what does a good experience look like? Not just from an MVP, because we're not going to do it all overnight. How do we evolve it and build it? And I think that's something that we've put into action ourselves at our One Manhattan West office in New York City, where we built the office at the time. It was the most connected office in North America, I believe. But the plan is for it to still be a world-class employee experience in 2030 and 2035 because of the infrastructure we've put into the building, that even some of the technology hasn't been turned on yet. And I think a lot of it will come down to build a really personalized experience. Organizations and employees are going to have to get much closer together. And I know in Europe, for example, there are a lot of concerns. We deal with a lot of concerns around that, workers' councils and the like. And I'd say that's probably the biggest blocker. It's definitely not a technical problem. It's a change management behavior adoption problem.
I really like what you mentioned also at looking at, okay, we already have these 5 capabilities and let's look at the next 3 or 4 or 5 that we think are needed in order to create the experience that we want, that deliver the results that we want. At the same time, it also means looking at the ROI and the effort and saying, maybe we don't do the 3 and 4, we only do 1 or 2 on for now, because that's what we can do. And that's the current possibilities. I think that makes it a lot more tangible than, let's say, saying, okay, you have to do this, you have to do this, this is best practice. But then it never comes down to the reality of the results and the capabilities of the organization.
Absolutely.
And that comes also to, you talk about the digital twin of the individual, right? This is actually going to be something useful in the future. What is that exactly?
Absolutely. So I think the last 2 or 3 years, we've heard probably every week on LinkedIn, someone is posting about digital twins. And if you're quite heavily embedded in the property technology space, digital twins come up all the time. And they're a fantastic way of effectively, how do we build a digital replica of a physical entity? In this case, most of the time it's a building, but where we're looking at taking this further is a digital replica of the individual. And we're not just talking about some avatar here. We're talking about all the data that's combined with your work persona. How do we take that and really digest it and understand it in the context of an organization? So to play that out, if they know that I sit within the marketing function, I work very closely with, these are my connections on the graph database effectively. These are the people I work with most. They're in the office on these days. you can then, to your point around having an intelligent AI, and I think maybe let's call it more, you know, effectively machine learning algorithms, right? That's all it is, this letting us do it, is you can start to recommend, oh, Harry, I know you work with Tom and Fred as an example. They're going to be in the office on Wednesday. Do you want to be in the office? And this cascading events of I then book a desk, or I have the AI book a desk for me, that then triggers people who also work closely with me. So when organizations talk about how do we bring people back to the workplace, it's not about being heavy-handed and forceful and saying you need to be in 5 days a week, 3 days a week, you need to be in on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's about subtly nudging people at the back end to really encourage them to visit, for example, go on Tuesdays, because I've configured the back end that I want marketing and finance to work closely together in this organization, in this building. So it's about having that organizational awareness. We can only do that with a digital twin of the individual. And I think sometimes it can be made to sound a bit sinister, but what it is effectively is, how can I take my understanding of your ways of working, the data, the metadata around your ways of working, and really build that out to understand, whilst I might like think of myself as an individual, there's probably many, many people like me in the organization. How do I understand how do we work? And then from there, rebuild those personas to say, okay, there's this bunch of people, let's call them Group X. How do we then build a really great employee experience for Group X? And we know they work, and we have the data quantitatively. We know they work in this way, A, B, C, D. Therefore, these are the touch points they're going to encounter. Which ones matter to them? And how can we make that a really great experience? So it all comes down to the data. How do we consistently capture the data, cache it, interpret it, analyze it, and then through that, come up with initiatives and programs that we then put through that workplace experience funnel driven by our chief experience officer to make sure we have that consistent positive feedback loop. We are always enhancing the employee experience, and it becomes a core organizational function.
It's funny you mentioned that this can be perceived as sinister, because at the same time, it's a lot about communication. When you think about, for example, e-commerce and cookies on websites, as long as it's explained clearly, okay, this is for your benefit as a user, and if you provide us with your data, we are going to be able to tailor your experience. Well, I think the last few years have shown that people are perfectly willing to accept these kind of things and actually can end up saying, okay, it's actually more of an annoyance of, than anything else to have to agree to every cookie disclaimer and on every website. So is it completely far-fetched to think that in the workplace at some point it will be very much acceptable, as long as it's clear what is it actually used for?
I don't think it's far-fetched at all. I think we're probably 3 to 5 years away from it being, I think, more accepted and commonplace. And obviously, the propagation of remote working is going to have to encourage that, because if you're not physically within the building, we need to be pulling more data about you. And I think employees appreciate that to a certain level. But in the same way, there's this, I call it a social contract with a company like Facebook. You go on Facebook and yes, you do give up a lot of your data and they analyze it. That's well known. But people are happy to do it because they get certain benefits, whether it's connecting with friends or posting on Instagram, whatever it is. There's this idea of a contract. I give you this and you give me that. And as long as I feel I'm getting the benefits, I'm in almost this positive state in terms of the contract. We need to build a lot more of that for organizations. So anecdotally, we rolled out a large IoT solution to a bank within the UK over the last couple of years. And people were very concerned about the sensor technology that was being installed in the building. They'd had issues with it historically. Where this led us to was, it just came down to change management and behavior and adoption programs that hadn't been run correctly. So as soon as you let people know, actually, we're not tracking you, we're not following you into the bathroom or seeing how long you don't spend in the office or at your desk, it's really more about, I need to understand as a business, do we have enough space? Because if we don't have enough space, we can look into getting you more. So it's really about taking it from a data, effectively telling the data stories. If we understand the workspace better and how you work better, we can customize the office to you, and also reassuring them that we're never just tracking the individual, we track it at an aggregate level. So I can never identify Harry in marketing, but I could, for example, identify marketing as a group of, say, 60 people. I noticed that these are their office hours, or actually they don't come in on Wednesdays at all, which means I can bring another unit in and that helps me close one or two buildings and helps my bottom line. So I think business leaders have to be better at explaining why they want to undertake these initiatives, and they shouldn't operate in stealth mode. They really need to be open. They need to be having these conversations, because if you do something in stealth mode and people find out about it, which they will, it then seems all the more sinister. So it's really about operating in the open, consistently reassuring your colleagues and the people that work with you that this is how we're using the data. This is the insight it's delivered. And this is how we're taking that data to make the workplace better for you. This is what we've heard. this is what we're doing. It sounds very simple on the face of it, but I think organizations often miss out on some of those nuances.
Right. And I think you also mentioned the notion of benefits. I would argue that, for example, if I was working in a very large organization where, for example, networking is a very important piece of your own development within the organization, and let's imagine that the systems are actually providing me with some nudges saying, hey, in the last X period, you have actually been creating less connections, or you have lost a certain number of connections, or things like that, which would be important actually for me, for my own benefit as a personal development angle. I would completely accept these kind of things because this would be useful for me, but it needs to be there in the first place and not just be delivered for a benefit of the organization.
Absolutely. And I think where we're going with this is lots of organizations from a, let's call it, customer-facing perspective, they're very data-driven. You know, they capture everything related to their sales pipeline, their supply chain, their internal operations. They run that very tightly. But when it comes to, I think, the workplace and productivity, it's always been a little bit nebulous. No one's ever really considered it. It's often been a back thought in many ways. And I think what we're seeing now is that actually, because of the fact it's largely been ignored over the last, say, 10 or 20 years from really thinking about how we move the needle on this, it's actually an untapped source of productivity and how we move organizations forward. So there's multiple studies which effectively back up just improving your employee experience, not your customer experience, just your employee experience actually leads to all these bottom line benefits. So when workplace leaders and technology leaders think about how do I get buy-in from the CFO, the CEO, etc., the evidence is there to show that if you put these initiatives into place, you can unlock a lot of additional benefits, bottom line benefits as well, for your business. So the business case absolutely exists. In terms of how we become data-driven, it's about capturing all this data, all this metadata that's coming off these data exhausts in your organization, and then having the team, because as much as we like to talk about machine learning and AI and all the breakthroughs, particularly over the last 2 or 3 weeks with, you know, ChatGPT and everyone thinking that AI is going to be taking over everyone's jobs, you still need a very robust data science team to go in and look at that data and really query and interrogate it and ask, what is it telling us? What can we do with it? And that's a function that organizations have for customer-facing departments. They don't have it for internal-facing departments. And I think it's something we're missing that will, again, benefit, will effectively lend itself to this continuous feedback loop.
But it's going to be, I suppose, a very interesting field, especially for companies like yours, because it also means bringing transparency on certain aspects of the life of an organization, which, like you said, is very nebulous. And so once this is starting to bring a lot of data and transparency in that field, this is going to be creating a lot of, let's say, tension and things to resolve culturally and in many different ways, which are quite difficult. I want to also move on to a bit of a different topic, but not too far away. We talked about buzzwords. Metaverse has been an extremely big one. Can you tell us why that is not necessarily just a buzzword when it comes to the workplace, but how could it actually transform our experience of work?
Absolutely. So the metaverse is going to be very important for workplace in particular, and I'll try and explain why. If we go back to what we said about the continuum, not all types of work are equal, and also they're very different. So if we take, for example, someone who works in the aviation industry, the ability, or rather the fact that you had to spend months and years training to be able to replace parts on a plane or something like that, or working as an engineer, using augmented reality, effectively one part of the metaverse, because the metaverse itself is a continuum. It's not just virtual reality headsets. It's everything from more immersive screens, augmented reality, full-on virtual reality, extended, you know, let's call it mixed reality, where you can actually interface with the physical world through the virtual. It's all these different modalities. But if we go back to that, for example, aviation engineer, they can put a Microsoft HoloLens on and they can almost have a step-by-step guide on how to replace pressure valves or compressors within an engine, almost without having anyone there to guide them. So you're getting on-the-job, lower-cost training. So I think what you're going to see, and it's very similar to what we're seeing with AI, is that we're going to be able to get a lot more help to workers in the front line, particularly, who previously were deep subject matter experts. Now, those deep subject matter experts aren't going anywhere. Effectively, the metaverse, and I believe augmented reality is going to arguably be the most important component of that, is going to be a force multiplier. It's going to let your deep subject matter experts have massive 10 to 100x leverage to effectively, instead of being able to train one engineer at a time, now I can train 10 or 100 or 1,000 simultaneously. So the ability to take your deep experts and propagate that out is massive. You can take the same example in healthcare, for example. We worked with a large healthcare provider to implement augmented reality I wouldn't say training, but it was actually kind of cancer care assessment. So you'd have one consultant at home doing the assessment, and a consultant is a very expensive individual. And if they can only cover, say, three people an hour, that's maybe not the best use of their time. Whereas if you have nurses and other more junior doctors with the headsets on, suddenly they can cover 10 to 15 to 13 an hour. So we're getting much more use out of the time. So for me, the metaverse is about how do we break down some of the boundaries that exist inherently within jobs and different types of work, and how do we streamline it? How do we take expertise that is there and propagate it out across the organization? Because the more deep experts we have, the more productive we'll be. And it will then mean that those deep experts can then go on to do more fulfilling tasks and actually grow their own expertise instead of just being continuous, say, on-the-job trainers or teachers or something to that effect.
That's fascinating, because just like artificial intelligence and machine learning today with ChatGPT is creating a lot of angst around jobs are going to be replaced, whole functions are going to be useless, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of, well, it's not that simple, and there's still going to be a need for competence. And so the way you've explained it is making it the same for the metaverse. That's very interesting. Also, when we're talking about workplace and the challenges of today, digital equity is a definite issue when it comes to bringing people hybrid and having people that are remote and people are on site and making them on the same level playing field. Is metaverse an answer to that, or is that too optimistic?
I'll go as far as saying it's not the only answer. It's not a silver bullet that's going to fix everything. It's definitely one important part of it. So when we were all in the office, in 10 of us working together, things were quite simple. And when we were all at home working remotely, maybe a bit more complex, but at least we were on a common platform. Where it really starts to get difficult is I'm in the office, you're in Starbucks, someone else is at a client site, and suddenly it's all very fragmented and broken. And we all end up basically working remotely, just in different locations, right? The metaverse, because of the fact it spans and breaks down these visual boundaries, and actually lets us smooth over the cracks, let's call it, and have that common interaction. So something we've been doing a lot of experimenting with in Accenture, and I know we've purchased something in the region of 70,000 Oculus headsets, and we all do, we onboard new joiners into the organization using virtual reality. So for me, training, learning, metaverse, if we talk about those technologies in terms of virtual reality and augmented reality, that's a really powerful combination. And doing those meetings, I think what's really powerful is, I know, and this will be common to everyone, sometimes you're in a meeting and you start looking at emails, you start reading something else, you're not focused solely on the conference. In the metaverse, because it's pervasive and fully immersive, there's no escaping that. So for certain meetings, it actually makes a whole load of sense to do it in the metaverse. So there's definitely an angle to that. And the way to see it is, it's another really effective tool in your arsenal you can deploy to be effective in the workplace. Now, it doesn't mean absolutely everyone needs one and it's going to fix everything. I think organizations will have to wrestle with the uncomfortable truth that a lot of, when we talk about the fact we've lost culture, we've lost the ability to work together, a lot of it comes down to leadership. And people don't like to hear that because it feels a little bit uncomfortable and everyone has to almost take responsibility for it. But I think the simple truth is that teams really do work best when they're in together in the office doing something innovative. Now, it doesn't mean they need to be in the office every day. It's about understanding what work do we need to do? When do we need to come together to do it? And when do you need to go and do some deep focused work? And you know what? If you want to be in the office, great. But if you want to be at home, no problem. And we have to get much better at working asynchronously. So in the past, I would just walk over to my colleague's desk, tap them on the shoulder, ask them a 10-second question, and then go back to work. Nowadays, to get that 10-second answer, it's so much more friction to do it. So we have to really rethink what are the processes that enable that? Is it about keeping, for example, a ongoing OneNote or Notion fully up to date? So if you're working on something, you're bullet pointing throughout the day, this is what I've worked on, this is what I've done, so I can see the work in progress. That's maybe somewhat similar, but also adds a degree of friction. So the answer is, there is no one right answer for companies, but leaders really need to look internally. And if you're not able to bring people back to the office, yes, that is symptomatic of culture, but leaders drive the culture largely. So leaders really need to look at themselves and think, okay, I need to start taking ownership for the fact that people aren't coming back. We're not improving productivity. How can I go about changing it? So I think the first step is to take responsibility and then to reach out to the team. The smart individuals, they'll know what they need. And it's about bringing them together with the right processes, technology, and then the right behavior and adoption to bring it all together. And I think that's how we go from where we are today to the future of work, which is going to be absolutely critical to get through the next 2 years of recession, but then really take advantage of the opportunity that the pandemic has given us, because I think we see a lot of people complain about the stresses and the problems it's caused. And don't get me wrong, it absolutely has caused those, but it also presents a fantastic opportunity to really reinvent how we work and why we want to work this way.
Right. And when you mentioned the pandemic, it's clear that it has forced people and organizations to take that leadership and to take that ownership of certain things and get things moving. I guess it's way more difficult to, let's say, experiment and innovate in the normal range of activities, I would say. And we know, everyone knows now, there is a need to capture data on experience in organizations. So employee experience, workplace experience. And that is already difficult for organizations to understand what that data should look like and where does it come from and so on. But then a lot of people also get lost when it comes to activating that data in order to take these topics forward and to have that leadership. Can you tell us a bit what you see out there when it comes to examples or ideas on how to do this tangibly, to take data and to activate it into an actual experiment?
Absolutely. I think what we're seeing a lot of in the market is always what we see at the kind of, as these hype cycles kind of progress through the middle phase, which is, I've identified Y problem, I need X solution to fix it. So they go out and they research on Google, employee experience platform, data platform, et cetera, and they reach out to their enterprise architects and they put together with Sellotape and String some solution that kind of works and kind of gets you the data. And I'm absolutely not saying that there is a solution that does everything in the market, but the point is that it's approached from a, I need to purchase a product to fix a problem, instead of thinking about, right, what are my hypotheses? How am I going to collect data to test those hypotheses? How can I implement change to really validate if I've made changes and then iterate moving forward? So it's this almost continuous cycle of taking a very scientific approach to the data-driven workplace. And I think what the reason we don't have that today is because most organizations, they don't have a chief experience officer or a head of experience, but more importantly, they don't have an experience management office. And this isn't just a function of, you know, typically when we go to a client and talk to them and they say, yes, we've got an experience management office. And we say, great, who, you know, how big's the team? They go, it's one person kind of in the corner, just looking at some data that's telling us we have a problem. And we're like, okay, that's a good first step. What you really need, I'm not saying you need an army of 100 people, but what you need is a team that actually brings the expertise from property, facilities, workplace, HR, et cetera, all these different functions together to say, when we're looking at that data, what is it really telling us? And that's something that as organizations try to create these functions themselves, they really need to keep at the forefront of their mind. How do I have the right people who have enough, let's call it data science acumen, they're good enough to understand the data and play with it, and then really understand, what is it telling me? Do I have context? Because if you take an excellent data scientist from another industry and bring them in, they'll be able to pull the data together, but they won't really understand what it means because they don't have context. So it's really about having those two Venn diagrams overlap. So that's a really important function, is having that experience management office, but then starting small. You don't need a huge workplace platform, a huge workplace team overnight. It's about saying, what are my big ticket items? What are the big problems I'm dealing with? And it's really a basic, you know, scientific hypothesis. We think there is a chance that there's this happening. We're going to test it this way. And we go about it and we do some A/B testing. We say, we look at, for example, the UK and Italy in within, say, departments of a company, different work styles, different approaches, maybe different processes. And we can A/B test and see, is there a difference here? If not, let's move on. But it's really about having that mindset of, we might not get it right the first time. We need a basic level of infrastructure, a basic level of data to assess these hypotheses, and then we can take it from there. And I think by starting like that and proving out the use case, that's how technology and business leaders will acquire over time more funding to effectively grow this platform to actually enhance what it can do over time. And I think that's how you effectively build the workplace data science platform of tomorrow. You start small and you iterate, but it's about having that, we may not get it right to start with, attitude. We're going to have to learn fast.
Yeah, that's interesting, because us at Locati, we've ended up, so for ourselves, obviously we have built a data analyst team, but we end up kind of renting it out to our customers in certain cases in order to build that context that you mentioned, because oftentimes our customers have access to data analysts, but they are, as you mentioned, not attuned to the issues of the business itself. And so
exactly,
in our case, we have more of this understanding, even though we're not in their shoes as their organizations, but we can do a pretty good job at starting to ask the right questions And then they start building that internally. But it's interesting how, like you said, everyone started by looking at a solution, but now there is a whole realization of, well, without context, that solution just doesn't get us anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted also to mention a lot of these discussions and a lot of these themes or possibilities are around innovation and figuring out what's next. And you are advising companies on getting ahead, right? And I'd like to think a little bit about these other companies. Those are right now are saying, nope, we're okay. We're not going to go after hybrid and explore, you know, different possibilities. We can think about the kind of immediate consequences on retention, for example. But what I like to think is about the long-term consequences. So making a choice now to not understand all these evolutions, how hard will it be later to catch up on that? If you haven't built these capabilities, if you haven't, for example, that capacity to create context out of data and to experiment, how much of a gap do you create? And also then from a culture and a knowledge perspective, the question is almost like, what happened to those companies that said, no, email, you know, we're not going to try this now?
It's a great question. And again, I'll come back to the amount to which you'll be protected will depend on which industry you're in. So for example, in very capital intensive industries, you'll be protected for some time simply because your industry probably moves a little bit slower, for example. So the rate of innovation inherently is slower because of that. Now, if you take a, say, fast-moving organization where your people really drive things forward, so financial services organizations, products teams, even for that example, that's where you're really going to fall behind. Because at the end of the day, what you're effectively not selling is your people, but your people are your key value driver. You don't have huge factories, machinery, product, etc. It's the people who come to work day in, day out, and deliver that value for the customers. So that's where it's even more important. If there are organizations like that that aren't considering this or aren't thinking about it, they're going to fall behind very quickly. Now, if they really focus on it, can they catch up? To varying degrees, yes. But I think it speaks much more to the mentality of an organization that maybe they aren't thinking about that or they aren't interested in doing that. That at the end of the day, the way the labor market has shifted is very interesting because right now it's obviously the power's been with employees for the last 2 or 3 years. During the recession, we'll probably see that subtly shift back to the larger organizations. And then as things start to improve, it'll go back to the employee. So employers should see this as an opportunity to actually get their heads down over the next 18 to 24 months and build that world-class employee experience. So as we come out of this large global recession, you have the best place to work. You want to be a company that is proud to be on the great places to work, best places to work surveys that every country has, because you're going to attract the best talent. That's what it comes down to. Effectively, you are trying to bring the best people together, and employees want to work for somewhere that they value it. They may not get it right day one. It may not be the best place to work day one, but it's the intent and the willing to build that great workplace and that great place to work that is going to encourage them to come to your organization and stay in your organization. I think when we look at it from a retention thing, don't get me wrong, I think you could easily look and see that the biggest variable is often your financial compensation. Obviously, nobody works for free, but the degree to which an organization can make you sticky just by being a great place to work and fostering a great community and culture, people don't often appreciate that until it's too late. So it's an important thing that if you don't do it, you are missing out on benefits and you're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars or pounds per year, depending obviously on the size of your organization. So it is critical to get this right.
That's great. And I think also for, let's say, from an individual perspective to our listeners, I'm hearing if you want to work in a context where there's going to be quite a bit of incentive and impetus to change and to get to these newer ways and newer opportunities, these are the industries that you mentioned where you don't have this protection and with a lot of competition, where everything is driven by the people. These are the industries where it's going to happen. That might be where it's interesting to be. Or on the other side, if you actually prefer to be quite, let's say, laid back and see what's happening, then maybe those might not be for you.
Absolutely. And again, we're painting with a very broad brush, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of manufacturing companies that are deeply, deeply innovative and do exciting things. But the innovation is coming from people, and it's coming because they have a great place to work and a great team culture in all likelihood. So it's really important to keep that front and center of the mind. Same as we've mentioned AI a couple of times, and I feel kind of compelled to talk probably a little bit more about it, given that what's everything that's happened with ChatGPT and OpenAI over the last few weeks is that technology is coming, whether we like it or not. Really, it's about understanding how can we take it and help it make us better at our jobs. That's really key. So people shouldn't be afraid of AI. Actually, use AI or machine learning to enhance you, make you more efficient at your job. You have to really think about everything in terms of leverage and everything we've talked about today, all the data exhaust, the digital twin of the organization, the individual, the metaverse. All these things are great tools for leverage that you can actually use to make yourself 10 to 50 times more effective at your job because you have data. You're not just saying, I feel like I'm more productive, or I feel this is better for our culture. You can actually go and prove it. And if you can prove it, you can then enhance it by testing these different scenarios. So I think where we're going is we're going to get to a great place in the next 5 or 10 years with workplace. They're going to be completely different, completely transformed from where they are today. And that's super exciting. But in order to get there, we all really need to stack hands and work together and say, right, how do we get our clients the right data with the right recommendations? And how do we set them up for success? It's not enough to go in and deliver a data transformation project for them. We really need to set them up in such a way that as and when we leave, and I'm speaking from the Accenture perspective, they have the capability to really do the hypothesis testing themselves. They can come up with ideas. They can implement these programs and take it forward and actually build those great workplaces of tomorrow, because that's really what we're focused on helping them achieve.
Well, thanks a lot, because this is extremely dense information for this conversation. That's pretty great. I will finish up with a couple of maybe more rapid fire, almost maybe superficial questions compared to all the things that we've discussed so far. We often talk about company culture and office space as being quite interlinked notions. And out of that, I like to ask a little bit of a stupid question. Is it the chicken or the egg first? So company culture, does company culture drive office presence, or is office presence actually a key driver in company culture?
It's a difficult question, and one that probably comes up every couple of weeks at work, both internally and with a client. So I think my view on it is that culture is actually, there's probably a third component here, which we're ignoring. Maybe it's the farmer, let's call it that way, but effectively the leader helps create that culture, which actually drives people to the office. So, and sometimes it's like a car engine, you need that ignition, that spark to actually get things going. So the leader basing themselves in the office builds a certain culture, you then get more office presence, and then it kind of rapidly evolves from there and it becomes this kind of snowball effect. The reverse is also true, where because the leader builds such as a great culture out of the office, you can then transport that into the office. And very rarely now are teams fully remote or fully in the office. They're a blend. So it comes down to leaders really understanding what are the tools in my toolkit that I can reach out and engage my teams who are mostly remote and mostly in the office. I have to treat them a little bit differently potentially, but how do I bring them together to make sure they gel well? And that's very, very situational. But I think I'll take a different view. It's not the chicken or the egg. It's actually the farmer that actually makes things happen.
That's a pretty great answer. Next one is, what's the most creative or experimental thing that you've done in the workplace or around the workplace so far in your career?
I'd say the most experimental thing was probably building One Manhattan West out in New York City. So there's a load of fantastic technology, everything from 5G distributed antennas, facial recognition, edge computing that's in the building, maybe not widely utilized today, but is going to be utilized and will keep the building relevant moving forward. I think there were a number of world firsts we achieved with that we're super proud of. But I think speaking transparently, we made a load of errors that we've then learned from and have iterated in our future place. And I think that's what made it a great experiment, is that the company, there were great leaders with great vision who trusted us to make those implementations and changes. We did that. We learned a load. And it's not about blaming people. It's about trusting them, encouraging them. And when there's failure, let's understand where that came from and then take it forward into future projects, buildings, whatever it is, and make them better. So making mistakes is fine, but maybe don't make the same mistake twice.
Great. And then to conclude, who should we reach out to next as a great guest for our podcast?
The first person that springs to mind is my colleague out in North America, Michael Prisatula, who's kind of our foremost workspace expert and is doing a load of fantastic and exciting work out both internally within Accenture and with our clients as well. So I would definitely recommend you speak to him.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Harry. Again, that was an extremely interesting and very, very dense conversation. So there'll be a lot of things for our listeners to mull and think over. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Raphael. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening. We will soon be back for more. And in the meantime, go visit our blog at Locati.com and have a look at the other topics we have covered, or stay tuned for more episodes of The Workplace Leader.